and once more. Tries to catch it, and they're claiming a wicket, and they've got a wicket. Good work by Slater's short leg, and Abel goes.
The people that really matter to this team are the people that come and watch. Yeah? We don't see so much of that out there. You've copped it all on different angles tonight for the first time, some of you, on different boundaries and seeing it for what it was worth. For what it was worth, I thought we were outstanding.
This is the Talk of Trent Bridge. I'm Matt Freeman, and as the Outlaws return from their Christmas break to step up preparations for the 2020 season, Ben Slater and Paul Franks joined me in the studio this week. So far, the winter's been made up of a series of arduous physical tasks for the Notts squad, and Paul opened up on just how tough he found it when he joined in with one of the endurance challenges.
I was hoodwinked into getting involved in that watt bike challenge.
How many Ks did you do?
Not enough, and I couldn't sit down for about 4 days afterwards. I'll leave the rest of you to your own imagination.
Also on the podcast, Ben discussed the unique demands of going back into club cricket as a county pro.
It's always nice to go back. Different sort of pressure, though. Sometimes harder going to play there than it is when you play out there. Sometimes you think, well, I'm putting myself through this, but no, it's always nice to go and play and help the lads out.
And we heard from an outlaw overseas as Chris Nash checked in from South Africa to talk about coaching with Gary Kirsten and how he came to spend a few days as part of the England test setup.
Bumped into Grant Thorpe and Chris Silverwood, and they were lovely to have you here for the next 2 days, just helping out, getting stuck in and learning. So I jumped at that opportunity, so I put my beer away and got a walk through and realised I had a 9 o'clock start on New Year's Day. So it was amazing to do that. That was so early on in my coaching.
But first, I had to find out why Paul Franks was so keen for Ben Slater to be his fellow guest on this week's podcast. I don't want to let too much of a light in on how we sort of choose the guests to come up on the podcast, but basically we just ran into you walking around the back of Radcliffe Road, asked if you wanted to do it.
Yes.
And you said, of all the people you wanted to come on the podcast with, it would be Ben Slater.
Yeah.
What was going on there?
I wanted to offer some variety. Okay. I feel like we've, you know, the Fletcher-Mullaney dynamic gets a bit boring for everybody to listen to.
Yeah, all right, okay.
And we offer an alternative on lots of fronts, myself and Slats. Our choice of football team to start with, proud of where we're from, the rivalry of the dozen miles between Mansfield and Chesterfield is well known to us men of North Nottinghamshire and Eastern Derbyshire. So, yes, a good place to start 2020.
The thing is, though, like the Mansfield-Chesterfield rivalry, do either of you even want to broach that at the minute? It ain't going well.
It doesn't go away. No, it's still there, whether we're not doing very well or not. Fair?
Yeah, it's a difficult one for me at the minute, because obviously me growing up, we've probably always been the better side, and now they're comfortably...
Can't even say the name.
I know them. They who must not be named. It's a lovely ground, though, isn't it?
What,
you got a nice ground, and that's, you know, that's all that matters
for the relegation zone of conference. Probably one of the best grounds in the league.
Best ground in the Conference North. I mean, you can't get much better than that for next year, can you?
Well, yeah, there's every chance we'll be there at the minute. So
full of positivity, so that's good lad, excellent.
Yeah, we've started.
Sound like
well.
My dad.
Now, we've dragged ourselves in at the crack of dawn this morning. It's nice to see the sunrise over the Trent Bridge turf, but it's quite early to be recording. Why are we in so early? You've got a busy day, haven't you?
Yeah, running around home Pierpoint in about 40 minutes, so that's going to be... lovely. Best not turn up late because Pricey will be all over
throwing
me.
You in.
Yeah, I'll be in the lake if I'm late. So ran around there with Fletch and Borley in October, and when it's windy, it's not ideal. So it'll be a tough session.
It's been a fairly tough week, hasn't it? Because we sort of saw you on I think a Monday, Tuesday, whichever day it was, doing the yo-yo tests in the halls around here as well. That looked pretty intense.
Yeah, obviously no one really likes the yo-yo, especially after Christmas and all that turkey. But no, I think all the lads did well, so they must have been keeping up to date with fitness over Christmas period, and everyone seemed to have improved fitness levels since before Christmas in October when we came back, so no, it's all good.
I know it's like a few of these things you've done when it's been the sort of walk back challenges, a few of the bits, the coaches have got involved. I didn't see...
No, you wouldn't have done.
...any coaches doing the bleep test.
No, it wasn't your fault. No, you didn't miss anything there.
I don't know if I was just at the wrong time.
No, I was hoodwinked into getting involved in that walk back challenge.
How many Ks did you do?
Not enough. And I couldn't sit down for about 4 days afterwards. I'll leave the rest of you to your own imagination. Going back to Slats's point, I think the majority of the pre-Christmas programme is built around physicality and developing each individual's a player's physicality. And the really encouraging thing for us and the testing we've done this week is the progression that they've all made individually. There's still a way to go. Let's not stop and rest on our laurels. That would be the wrong thing to do. But it's about them putting a shift in and making sure they're in good shape come April, and they're certainly on the right path to be doing that.
What happens on day one when you get back? Is that kind of almost like a weigh-in? Are you being tested on how you are from before to after?
Very much so, very much so. That goes over to Pipey, Liam and Henry. That's their department to make sure that the battery of tests that they run are up to date. The scales come out, everything's done by the book to make sure that the lads have no wriggle room whatsoever in terms of, oh, it was this or oh, it was that. Those days are gone. So yeah, it's a very, very well-oiled machine.
Did you have to watch what you were sort of eating, drinking over Christmas then a little bit? Did that play in a little bit?
Me or him?
Well, either. Either or.
I think you do. Obviously, you put a little bit of weight on over Christmas. It probably always going to happen with the festivities. But I think this year, if I knew I was having a few drinks one day, or I'd probably try and get to the gym in the morning and. So at least I'd done something. I did quite a few sessions over the break. So I think it's important to do that, just to make sure, even if you put a bit on, that you're not losing the cardiovascular work or those strength stuff that you've done before. I think it's important, really.
I think I saw on your Instagram as well that you took on the challenge of cooking the turkey this year.
That was a couple of days before.
Oh, was that like a
Well, my girlfriend's from Newcastle, so she went home and I went home, so we sort of had our own little Christmas dinner sort of thing. But nah, I couldn't do it on Christmas Day. I left that to my grandma. It's too stressful.
Yeah,
just two of us. Never mind 10-12 of us. So
yeah
I pretend I help out with the Christmas dinner.
I just stand around the edge. Make the odd witty quip every now and then. Offer to fill everybody's glass and you're doing your job.
I'm sure those witty quips go down really well when there's a stressful kitchen situation.
Not so much. Keep the mother-in-law's glass nearer the top than the bottom.
Yeah,
and you're normally in good shape.
Now, obviously, pre-season training well underway over here, but a few Outlaws overseas as well, including Chris Nash, who's been out there coaching with Durban Heat and picked up a little bit of a role with the England setup in the lead-up to that second test win over South Africa. So I spoke to him earlier this week and asked how it came about, his role with England.
Funny enough, actually, Brodie, obviously good mates with Brodie, and he said to me, come to the New Year's Eve party. So I went down for a drink with the guys and bumped into Grant Thorpe and Chris Silverwood, and they were like, oh, you're out here, and they were like, we'd lovely to have you here. It was tomorrow, it was the 1st of Jan, so they said, if you want to, you know, we'd love to have you for the next 2 days, just helping out and getting stuck in and learning. So, you know, I was like, jumped at the opportunity, so I put my beer away and got a water and realised I had a 9 o'clock start on New Year's Day. So it was great, and I know that Silverwood was brilliant. He, you know, he gave me a huge amount of time over the 2 days and just said he's really looking to get English coaches involved within the English setup. So it was amazing to do that, and so early on in my coaching, I was just trying to put into a position, given responsibility, and they let me go with it. So again, you kind of learn on the job again.
How was the England cricket New Year's Eve party? I suppose they can't go too mad, can they?
No, it was very quiet. There was a bus leaving at 12:10. We were supposed to watch the fireworks, but there was another hotel in the way, so that kind of scuppered that. So the lads were pretty chilled. I mean, they all knew they had a big test match coming up on the 3rd, so they were very, very relaxed and focused on training the next day.
So what exactly were you involved with the guys then?
Well, pretty much for the whole of training. I got there early, helped set up the fielding drills, and Silver kind of introduced me, so I was with the boys for 2 days, and then I was put to work just helping out normal stuff, really, doing a bit of fielding work with the lads. I played in the games at the last two games of football ever to be played by an England team, and then I was just in the nets, kind of, you know, side-arming, throwing to the lads and just helping out where I could. So yeah, brilliant for me just to kind of get to work and get stuck in, and that's the only way, I think, as a guest coach, is just go in and help out and do anything you can.
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of quite early stage in your coaching career. What do you think you've took from that?
Just that it's not as scary as I thought. You know, I walked into the Durban Heat environment, you know, a lot of international players there, and obviously myself having, you know, I haven't got a name in coaching. I was, you know, I'm obviously a player and I played for a long time, but that doesn't make me a good coach. It just makes me someone with a lot of knowledge from playing. So I had a lot of conversations with Morsy before, a lot of players, other contacts I've got, like Mahela Jai Wardner and Gary Kirsten. Obviously we sat down and spoke a lot about the key bits, and the one thing I spoke to Pete a lot about, and was, you know, especially when I'm first working with players, is to is to not just throw three balls and jump, you know, run down and tell them something. It was a case of, you know, be patient. If they come to you, then it kind of opens the door for you to get involved and work with them. It's a new job, isn't it? So you're quite nervous, but to be able to have a few things that you can hang your hat on, like you do as a player, gave you quite a lot of comfort, and they worked really nicely.
What was it like being in a different role with Alex Hales there, not teammates as such, but sort of you coaching this time?
Yeah, I think it's quite hard because we're good mates as well. We've obviously played a lot of cricket together, played against each other. So it's, I think in a T20 format, you can kind of, the line can be crossed a little bit more. I think it's a bit more relaxed, a bit more friendly. I really enjoyed working with him, watching him operate, learning off him. It was just a really good time to spend with him, to spend with all the top players there, and also just to kind of, you know, basically listen to Gary for 6 weeks, ask questions, spend a lot of time with him one-on-one, and you know, just at dinner and in the car and stuff like that, and just kind of gather all the information I can, which will hopefully help me.
That's Chris Nash talking to me a couple of days ago. I mean, what a game that was, by the way. That second test, Ben, that finished a couple of days ago. The finish was unbelievable, wasn't it?
Actually, I didn't see it. I think because we were in training. I didn't manage to see it. I was just seeing the highlights and everything after and the fallout and that. But, yeah, unbelievable. Were they five down at tee to get five in that last session? And they'd been batting well, I think. Obviously, Stokes again. After what he'd done last year, then just keeps on getting better.
Nashie obviously must have been a difference there.
Don't say that.
I saw a tweet the other day, and you put out about him. It must have been Nashie's influence on the England team.
That's all it could have been. They'd not won in Cape Town for 60 years.
It's a good point, and it's a very, very stronghold of South Africa cricket. You know, Newlands is a wonderful, iconic cricket ground. And I sort of sat at the end of day one thinking England were in a better position than everybody was having us think. You know, never try to judge what's going on in a longer format game until both teams have batted in the first innings. It stands the test of time. Anderson outstanding in that first innings, along with Broad, who could have had a little bit more, keep his foot behind the line, that might help. But essentially, I thought we were right in the game. Could we have made more? Yes, but we were in the game. And then really pleased for Dom Sibley, who I thought played really, really well. He's been under some serious scrutiny these last few test matches. Can't bat this way, can't do that, can't do the other. And then all of a sudden that all lifted and now he's the next best thing. So it'll be interesting to see how, you know, in the absence of Anderson, who's out for the rest of the series, how the rest of the lads have to step up to fill that void. We've seen Brodie do that in the past and he's going to have to step and do that again. And the lads that come in, but I think, you know, the squad depth now with the likes of Archer and Wood, Wokes, who no one's even mentioned since we got there, available for these last two tests, I think it's set up really nicely.
In terms of hearing from Chris a couple of minutes ago, his experience this winter, not just with England, but then coaching with Durban Heat as well. I mean, you coached with the UAE a few years ago. Does that sort of experience of coaching in a different setup in a different country, do you think that helps your coaching develop as well?
If it doesn't, you're the one with the problem. And you've got to have an open enough mind. I look back now on that period of time where, like you say, I was involved with them, and it stands me in good stead for a lot of different sets of circumstances. If you're learning from everything you do and the journey that you go on, then you're in a good place. I think franchise cricket is subtly different to coaching with a team. You spend a lot of time with the same group of blokes. You know, as a franchise, players get thrown together. You've got a very short period of time to make it work. The environment becomes very important very quickly. You want everybody settled, everybody feeling like they're part of it, and then off you go and you're playing. Whereas the team aspect of it all is more progressional. It can be quite elongated. You can have a relatively medium and longer term view on a lot of things whilst staying in touch with the present. So yeah, the franchise aspect of it and the team aspect of it are subtly different. Great opportunity for Chris. I'm sure he'll come back with some really, really good ideas, and you know, to work with someone like Gary Kirsten, you know, I'm sure will be a really big benefit for him.
Whereabouts was it in sort of your career when you thought that you were going to go into coaching? Was that always going to be the thing?
It was, but it was for the wrong reasons initially. You know, I just assumed that it was what I wanted to do. It was what I'd always done. And then quite quickly, I realised that wasn't going to be enough. That was, you know, just because it was what I knew. I didn't appreciate the need for everything that goes with it. You know, because as a player, you see a completely different side of the game to the one you see when you're working as a coach manager, call it what you want. The behind the scenes aspect of it, there's so much more at play all the time. You're thinking about everybody and everything. And then you're trying to work out which bit is most relevant, which person needs the most attention at that point, and then the team and what the team needs. So there's a lot at play all the time. Whereas the player, as an individual, cricket's a very individualised sport. Bat, ball, field, only ever one person at one time. So understandably, as a player, you're quite self-invested. You've got to do your bit. You've got to make sure that you're trying to do the bit that's going to help the team. And that's the bit that, as coaches, we have to tap into. And you know, certainly as you know, I'm in 5 years in now. I've seen some good, bad, and indifferent, and I'd like to think I've learnt a lot along the way.
So quite a big mentality shift then, from just thinking I'm just looking after me, to suddenly having 20, however many people to look after.
Yeah, I think it is, and I think it's underestimated. You know, people talk about, and I'm sure Slats will understand it. He will have heard it and probably said it, that when people talk about people changing when they go from being a player to a coach, well, I can tell you absolutely have to. You have to be different. You can't be the person that you always were. So there's subtle needs to be confident in the person that you are, but need a different skill set, absolutely.
Now, something I've been asking everyone on the podcast in the past few weeks has been about sort of who it was that inspired them to pick up a bat and ball, who it was that made them want to play the game. I'm probably going to stop doing this in a couple of weeks because so far everyone said Andrew Flintoff and I'm sort of bored of it. But I'm going to give it another go anyway. So, I mean, maybe it wasn't someone you saw on the telly, maybe it was, or was it like a family member? I'd say probably family.
Grandad, dad, playing at Bolsover.
Yes, what a spot.
in the Bassett Law League growing up. So, yeah, it's when I first came over to Notts, my dad said to me, he said, it's funny because Derbyshire at that time, he never used to go and watch Derbyshire, even though Bolsover's Derbyshire.
Yeah.
And that's where they played. It was always Notts because he played in the Bassett Law League and that. So they never ever went to watch Derbyshire when they were young. It was always Notts.
And sensible call.
Yeah. I never knew that. But yeah, so for me, growing up, watching my granddad, who was supposed to be a bit of a league legend by all accounts.
Thousands of wickets.
And my dad, a bit of a slogger, but probably not as good as my granddad. So them two, yeah. And then probably growing up, Ian Blackwell was at Chesterfield when I was a kid, so looked up to him when I was young. Then like people like Trescothick, Cook, Lara, those sort of the people, batters, batting wise.
And you've sort of kept your hand in with club cricket, haven't you? I saw that you turned out for Chesterfield a couple of times last year.
Yeah. I played about 9-10 games, I think, last year. Always try and get back when I can, especially if we've got sort of week or weekend off and gets me a chance to have a hit. I think that's the main thing, really, just to go and have a bat, really. But it's always nice to go back. Got mates there and different sort of pressure, though. So always sometimes harder going to play there than it is when you play out there. So yeah, it's sometimes you think, well, I'm putting myself through this, but no, it's always nice to go and play and help the lads out.
Yeah. Paul, I suppose for you, who was it that inspired you?
I was similar. You know, Slats touched on the Bassett Law League aspect of it. I grew up with that. As well, there were lots of very, very good professionals at my home club, Farnsfield, and then around the teams, you know, the colliery aspect, Welbeck, Thoresby, Worksop, Blidworth, you know, you keep going and going and going. Retford were a very strong team back in those days. They had some great professionals, overseas players.
Yeah.
Franklin Stevenson was in the league. You know, there were so many good players in that league that I just used to go and, I think I changed the tins on the scoreboard, and I used to sit and watch, and my old man was playing. I was watching it thinking, crikey, if I get to be half as good as some of these blokes, I'll be absolutely delighted. So my old man would have been my one that instilled it in me to start with, and I was lucky enough to probably track through 6, 8, 10 years of really, really good players at a time when I needed that inspiration, if you like, someone to look at and go, crikey, it's it Miles, or he can bowl fast. Andy Pick, David Milnes, I could keep going on and on. These were guys that I looked at and thought, yeah, I want to be that bloke. I want to grow up and be as fast as him or as good as that. And thankfully, you know, that sort of still lives with me. You know, I look at players now, and I hope that there's that generation of young men and young girls out there that look at our players and think, one day I want to be that. I want to play on the big stage on a Friday night. I want to be in a championship winning team. You know, I want to do all those things, because that's a really nice aspiration to have.
some big names in there. Some really big names.
Some proper players.
Yeah. I know you've got to get to your windy run around Home Pier Pond.
Not me.
So I'll let you go. You're not joining this one either?
No, I've got some work to do.
Yeah, I bet. Typical.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks, Paul, for popping in this morning. We'll be back again soon, and there's plenty more behind-the-scenes stuff as well on the website at trentbridge.co.uk.